This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net. No one has ever said becoming a full-time author is as easy as ABC. In fact, oftentimes, attempts to do so feel a lot more like attempts to learn calculus in a foreign language. But, as today's guest will tell us, using the ABCs to help us develop a more nuanced understanding of what it might look like to become an author entrepreneur or authorpreneur might help us get a little closer to achieving that dream. Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell. And welcome to episode 87 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. For this episode, I'm joined by author Amanda Ziba, who, in addition to having written and published 10 books for children and adults, works to help other writers tell their own stories through classes, workshops, and retreats. Amanda is a critique leader and board member of the Mississippi Valley Writers Guild, and also a member of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. She lives in Wisconsin with her husband and two sons. Aside from all of that, Amanda was kind enough to attend one of my book tour events for Mourning Dove, the sequel to Imminent Dawn in my empathy sci-fi saga. Since having connected with Amanda at that event, we've had an opportunity to connect each other with other members of the Wisconsin writing community, which is something I'm very much grateful for. So thank you, Amanda, for that, and thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. We'll get to my full conversation with Amanda in just a few minutes, but first, it's time for something entirely different. We've been at this podcasting gig for almost 4 years now, and I'm realizing, listener, that you and I, we haven't really had the chance to get to know one another. It might seem strange, yes, for me to be saying that here, in this space, one in which you can't respond directly, or at least immediately. But starting now, with this episode and every episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast going forward, I want to change that. I want to share more about who I am, what I'm working on, what I fear, dream of, aspire to, and dread, and I want you to do the same. So before we get to our author interviews, you and I will have the opportunity to discuss the personal, the practical, and the communal. But for there to truly be a you and I, we'll of course need you to participate, and here is how we can make that happen. Head to rightscast.net/hello. Do it now, do it tomorrow, 2 weeks from now, whenever it suits your fancy, and tell me what you're working on. Tell me why you love it, why it's frustrating you, why it feels like you can never get anywhere with your querying journey, or how, exactly, you're keeping your chin up and embracing the challenge that comes with every hour in your battle against the blank page. I'm serious. Talk to me. At rightscast.net/hello, you can choose to answer a few optional questions about yourself, your work, what it is you read, and what you'd like to hear more about on the RightsCast Network, and then share away. Ask your questions, impart your affirmations, offer your advice to others in our community, or simply say hello. So let's get started then with the first of these conversations by exploring the personal. Recently, I asked you on Twitter, Facebook, and our weekly newsletter to tell me a little bit more about yourself, and I'm so thankful for those of you who did. Based on your replies, it seems like we have, surprise, surprise, quite a few novelists on our hands, but that's not to say we don't have writers of nonfiction and poetry in our midst either. I see you, nonfiction and poetry folks. I see you. But I do want to talk to those novelists now specifically and share a bit about where I am with my manuscripts in the hope that you will share with me too. So where are we then? Where am I? Well, right now I've got three projects I'm juggling. There's one that I'm calling Cranberries, or technically by its tentative title, When the Stars Conspire. There's another project called Scambait, and one I've only started dabbling on more recently called To Have Been Rich. These are all in unique stages of their own journeys, and I'm sure we're going to have many opportunities to talk about them in future episodes, but today I want to focus on the Cranberry novel, or When the Stars Conspire. Well, why cranberries? Why am I using that word to refer to it at all? Well, because this manuscript takes place on a cranberry farm in northern Wisconsin. How cozy, right? But why When the Stars Conspire? Well, hopefully the one-sentence pitch for this book helps clarify that. After narrowly surviving a plane crash, a mysterious pilot with amnesia and a rural Wisconsin cranberry farmer must rediscover a shared past while overcoming otherworldly foes, from within and without, in order to secure a future for all sentient life in the universe. Okay, so there's a lot there. Is this the perfect pitch? No, probably not, but the good news is I haven't had to use that particular pitch all that often yet. There's still time to refine it. I mean, I am, in fact, querying this manuscript right now, and we'll actually be taking a closer look at the statistics for that querying journey in just a moment, but so far, I've been able to rely on a different hook to kick off every one of my queries. And what's that hook? Zachary Carmichael is going to die, and all he's left with are questions. Bump, set, spike. Maybe, sure, I feel pretty good about it anyway, but hey, let's crunch the numbers and see what a pitch like that is actually doing for me in the world of querying, and then see what we can learn about that as queriers and as writers in general from there. So seeking the representation of a literary agent is a daunting endeavor, and this manuscript would know. This is actually the second time that Cranberries, or When the Stars Conspire, has been on Query Road. Back in 2018, I was actually offered a contract for this book with a smaller publisher, but after reviewing the contract they sent over, we were not a good fit, and so I turned that offer down and then... nothing. I just stopped querying. Not really sure why. I think it's because my attention was elsewhere with the release of other books, but hey, what are you going to do? The nice thing is that in early 2020, I picked the book up, did another few rounds of revision, and I've been querying it again since March. So let's take a look at what the querying numbers have been like to see if we can deduce anything from this. Well, since March, I've sent a total of 52 queries. 25 of them are pending with no response. I've received 2 partial requests, 1 full manuscript request, and 25 rejections. Okay, if you're doing the math, you've recognized already that those numbers don't quite add up, but that's because one of the partial requests would later prove to be a rejection, but hey, them's the breaks. So what does any of this mean? 25 rejections. Does that feel like a lot? A little? I don't know. It feels like a lot when you look at it at first, but even if rejections don't quite sting as much as they used to when I was querying, it feels like, and because we are, this is what the numbers would say, we're at almost a 95% rejection rate. At least if we use the numbers there. But let's dig further and see if we can frame this a bit differently for ourselves, especially if you're someone who's on querying road and sort of confronting this for yourself right now. To re-examine these numbers, let's ignore the 25 pending queries with no response so far. After all, we can't say it's a rejection, and we can't say it'll be a partial or full request yet either. Think of it kind of like Schrodinger's submission. These ones, they're sort of dead, but also alive at the same time, and honestly, alive or dead, knowing that doesn't do as much good. So we're going to set those aside. Set aside Schrodinger's submissions, and think then about the 27 queries that are left. Well, from those, we have that one full request, awesome. We have 2 partial requests, and 24 outright rejections. Because let's ignore that one of those partials would later become a rejection. We can't assume that every partial request will eventually come back as a rejection, after all. So what is our hit rate now? And by hit rate, I mean how often, percentage-wise, are we receiving full or partial requests based on the number of queries we send out? Well, using these new numbers, we go from 5% to 11%. That's pretty good, actually. Based on the numbers we have here, we'd expect approximately 11% of those pending submissions to become either partial or full requests, which would mean, of the 25 still pending queries, we could actually see another 3 partial requests or even full requests come in. So, cool. All right, see what we did there? Now, rather than focusing on the prospect of another wave of rejections rolling in, doesn't it feel better to know there are a handful of agents out there who, if the numbers can be believed, will, in the coming weeks or months, be reaching out to ask for more? Personally, I cherish the thought. Maybe that's a thought worth keeping in mind for all of us. Whether we're querying now, have queried in the past, or will query in the future, remembering that the querying process, it's a numbers game, right? And more than that, honestly, it's a people game. Because on the other end of every one of those queries is another reader, a prospective cheerleader and advocate for your work. On the other end of every one of those queries is a person. You just have to have the patience to find the right one for you and your book. So does this help, listener? Does it hurt? What are the numbers looking like for you on your querying journey? Share them with me at writescast.net/hello. Tell me how much you're looking forward to that next partial or full request rolling in. Tell me too, if you're worried about your query, about your synopsis, or about your pitch in general. I want to help. We all do. Because, and I promise you this is true, I want to see your book and my book side by side on the same bookshelf someday. All right, we'll leave it there for now and hop into my interview of author Amanda Zeba, who's joined us for a really enlightening conversation about the ABCs of authorpreneurship. Stay tuned after the episode for updates on what you can expect next from the WritesCast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Amanda Zeba, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell WritesCast here on the WritesCast Network.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah, we have a really interesting topic ahead of us because, you know, we use the ABCs all the time in our writing, of course, but, you know, we're not thinking about them in that context today. We're talking about the ABCs of authorpreneurship. And so let's start there with this bird's eye view. Amanda, what are the ABCs of authorpreneurship?
The ABCs of authorpreneurship is a collection of strategies, tips, lessons, mindsets, and techniques that you can use to take your writing career to the next level.
So it's the idea of looking not necessarily at exclusively the brass tacks of writing craft, but it's looking at this idea of authorpreneurship and this career aspect to it. Why don't you tease out a little bit for listeners, if you would, what it is that we mean by authorpreneurship?
So these days, when you are an author, you are essentially running a small business. And this is probably, I don't know if it's always been like this, but it feels like lately it is becoming more and more of a small business. You know, authors are being expected to promote their books in ways that they haven't in the past, and be in the public and teaching and speaking. And so this is just a collection of ideas to try to help you excel at that and move forward with this kind of new way of working as a writer.
And it would seem then that this knowledge of what it means to be a writer or to try to have a career as a writer in our day and age would be among the motivating factors for developing this sort of set of techniques or ways of looking at one's career. Aside from that, are there other motivations that had you wanting to develop this way of looking at being an author?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, a lot of people feel like being a writer, there's like this myth that you just sit in your basement by yourself all the time. And that really isn't true anymore. You have to be out there. And I know that it's something that makes people nervous. It makes some people nervous. I love it. I have a great time with it. It's part of my favorite, you know, part of being an author is hanging out with other writers and meeting people and readers. But some people get really nervous about it. So I wanted to be able to share what I've learned in a way that other people could replicate for themselves so that they could also have success. As far as like the ABC model, I'm a word nerd. I call myself a word nerd all the time. I love anything to do with the written word. And so when I thought about how I was going to share this information with people, I thought, you know, should I do it like chronologically or by importance or, you know, what would be the best way? And then I kind of hit on the ABC idea, and one topic or idea for each letter of the alphabet just felt really fun for, you know, this word nerdy kind of person.
Well, and what I really like, Amanda, just personally for you, even from a branding standpoint, is we have this idea of the ABCs of authorpreneurship, and you're taking us from A to Z as Amanda Zeba. And I just think that's great. I don't know. That's just kind of a fun aside thing that I noticed in my own mind, but it just seemed like it matches up really well for that reason too.
It does. And I definitely did not pick my husband because of his last name. it did play out really well for me.
Yeah, you know, and we couldn't have blamed you if you had chosen him for that, because it is just great. I mean, it sets you up for wonderful things like this. But, you know, that aside, we are, of course, you know, walking into this with the knowledge that, wow, there are 26 letters in the English alphabet. So that's a lot of techniques and things of that nature to try to cover. And in the space that we have here to talk today, we won't have an opportunity to do all 26 of them, but we'll be taking a look at 7 of those letters more closely before we let listeners know where they can learn about the rest of them. So Amanda, why don't you let listeners know, what are the 7 letters that we'll be looking at today, and what do those letters stand for?
Yep. Okay. So we're going to be going through J, which stands for Jesus of Nazareth Syndrome, C for collaboration, S for support, N for needs versus wants, P for passive revenue stream, U for updating, and finally, W, why is writing any different?
All right. I like that. We've got an overview there. So folks, if you were taking notes at home, you've got a feel for the direction we're going to take this conversation. But you know, people might think, okay, well, we're going to do them in alphabetical order. No, we're not. We're going to be roguish today and just do it in an order that feels natural to what you and I think decided in advance. We're going to start actually with the letter J, because this one was completely new to me. What is, Amanda, what is Jesus of Nazareth syndrome, and why is it important that we as writers understand it?
Yeah, so this is more historical than religious, so don't get nervous, people. We're not going to talk about religion. But when Jesus first told the people in his hometown that he was the Messiah, that he was going to save them all, people looked at him kind of like he was crazy. They were like, Jesus, like, don't you just live down the street? Aren't you like the carpenter's son?
Yeah, man, you were just making tables last week. What happened to your table hobby?
Yeah, how are you going to save the world, man? And so he had to leave home. He had to go out and perform miracles and do amazing things far, far away from his hometown before he could come back home and people would believe that he was who he said he was. And so I think about this in the context of being a writer or really any expert. You know, when people in your hometown hear that you're a writer, they say, oh, that's nice, you know, but they don't necessarily think of you on the New York Times bestseller list. And so when I was first starting out, you know, I would go to my local library and my kids' schools and even schools that I worked at and be like, here are my books. Don't you love them? Do you want to put them in your library? You know, do you want me to judge writing contests for you? Do you want me to lead story time? And like, nobody wanted to. Like, they were not interested at all. Even I had a friend who, you know, picked my book for her book club. And she's like, yeah, at first we picked it because we're like, oh, it's a local author. That'll be a nice thing to do. But like, not even because they were excited about the story. But then when I went to other portions of the state and I spoke at conferences and I did school visits and I taught at writing camps and I did these big and cool things farther away from home. And then I came home and told people about it. And I was like, yeah, and they actually paid me to do it. You know, then I had some experience to back up my skills. So again, this can be, you know, for any skill or expertise. Don't be disappointed when your hometown, you know, doesn't believe you're as great as you think you are. They see, you know, that little girl who, you know, learned to ride her bike around the block, or that kid who, you know, they knew in high school, or, you know, from church. They don't see you as the expert. And it can feel kind of crappy that like your hometown people are not your biggest cheerleader. Yeah. But I would remind you that a no right now is not a no forever. And if you don't handle these no's right now graciously, if you get kind of bitter about it and you burn some bridges, then later on in your career, when you do have the experience to back up your level of expertise, you might have burned that bridge and you might not be able to come back to that opportunity even later on. So I'll just tell you to, you know, hide your bitterness and hang in there for a little bit later. Because it will work out. It kind of hurts in the beginning.
And I will say, Amanda, from personal experience, that this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this letter in particular, because, you know, you mentioned that you had to get outside your hometown and get to other parts of our home state of Wisconsin here to really feel like you were being seen as an individual who has the expertise to back up this bibliography that you have, you know, the books that you have published, I have found that I might have to even go a little farther than the state of Wisconsin because, Amanda, as you know, I did a book tour in 2019. I thought it would be so cool to go around the state and say, hey, this is the draw, right? It's a Wisconsin author coming to your town, and he's going to be talking about this book that sold really well online when it first launched, and it has all these really cool topical things going on in the world of technology now. But then I went to bookstores, and Amanda, you were the one person with your son to visit my book event, and I was very grateful that you came out, but that actually turned out to be the case for me at most of the places I went. You'd get one person to pop in, sometimes zero people to pop in, and our reading becomes a tabling event. And you can't let it get you discouraged, right? I know that when I had that experience meeting you in La Crosse and meeting the bookstore owner there in La Crosse and all the cities I visited across the state, these were great connections. It wasn't about burning bridges and being sad that, like, I felt as if they didn't do a good job with publicity, because that wasn't the case at all. These were opportunities to just connect with the community, and it led to a lot of opportunities to do speaking engagements in 2020, which, you know, most of them got canceled, but hey, we'll be back in 2021 kind of thing. So it's an investment in your future, right? And sometimes it's about, I would say in my experience, getting outside your hometown and then perhaps even farther than that. We'll see where I play well at some point here, right? But this was a really great idea, and that's why I loved this letter J so much.
Yeah, it really is a great mindset to have. Another awesome example is I was supposed to go to the Sharjah International Book Festival for children in the United Arab Emirates in April, and it ended up getting canceled, like most of everything, you know, in our spring and summer of this year. But even putting on my resume that I was invited to that, like, opened up, like, all of a sudden people started emailing me saying, would you come speak at our Friends of the Library event? Or we'd love to have you come to this community event. And even though I didn't attend the event, actually, just knowing that somebody halfway across the world wanted me to be a speaker there, it just opened up people's eyes to, oh, shoot, maybe she really does know what she's doing. So hang in there. Don't be bitter. It'll be good.
Right. Hang in there and make it count. Like you say, you were invited, and saying that you were invited to speak at an event, even if the event falls through, that's still something. You can throw that on a resume, and it's a great thing to put out there. So things to keep in mind, folks, if you're among the people like me and Amanda who had many events canceled this year, it still counts if you were invited, and you've got next year to look forward to. So very good. Well, we've talked about the letter J. We've got a few more to cover here, of course. So let's actually go back in the alphabet nearer to the top here and talk about the letter C, which to me feels like a logical place to head next, because we're talking about stepping out into the world. And C stood for collaboration and intentional collaboration, nonetheless. So why is intentional collaboration important?
So intentional collaboration is when you make purposeful decisions about including others in your project because it's going to maximize or increase your end results. And I'm going to use an example to explain this. So my most recent book is called Champion Chocolatier, For Better or Worse. It's the third book in the series, light, fluffy, Hallmark-styled romance. And in it, the characters are getting married. Sorry, spoiler alert, people. and I knew that I wanted to have a wedding cake on the cover of the book. And so I could have just gone to Shutterstock, like I often do for the cover images on my book, and put any old wedding cake on there. But instead, I decided to be intentional about it. So I started Googling bakeries in Duluth. My stories take place in Duluth. And I found a baker who had beautiful wedding cakes. I found a cake that matched the color scheme I was hoping for in my cover. And I emailed her and I said, hey, Lindsay, Snazzy Cakes Bakery in Duluth. Would you be interested in letting me use the image of your cake on the cover of my book? And not only was Lindsay super excited about this, but the bride, whose cake it actually was super excited about this. So by putting this particular cake on the cover of my book, I now have two new cheerleaders and fans of this story who are telling everybody and their brother that their wedding cake is on the cover of a book. Again, we've talked about everything that's been canceled, but, you know, I was supposed to have, you know, a book reading in Duluth, and Lindsay the baker was going to be there and provide some treats for the event. And I think the bride was going to stop by, and, you know, I wouldn't have had any of that hype or buzz or like extra cheerleaders if I would have just gotten any old cake picture and put it on the cover of the book. But because I was intentional about collaborating with somebody, the result was much, much better. So you should try to think about who else you can include in your process that is going to help you out in that way. And I also always try to think about reaching out to people who either have a different audience than I do or a slightly bigger audience than I do, because that's just going to help me reach new people.
And that is just astonishingly smart to me. I actually did not know that story going into this, but that is really incredible. And it's a testament to how taking not only this intentional collaboration idea with us on our journey, but also using it to stay human-centered in our marketing approaches, which is a huge deal to me. Is it something I'm learning more and more about here? And listeners might recognize this idea of human-centered marketing from our interview of Dan Blank back in what I believe was episode 78. And by reaching out one-on-one, Amanda, to other people, they were able to connect you with others. And that word of mouth is so incredibly powerful, more powerful than working the algorithms on Facebook or Amazon or whatever the case is. I still am confident that that word of mouth recommendation does so much more for us than any of that other stuff can. And I think that the anecdote you've shared with us here is not only a testament to that, but we can feel the excitement and feel that connection as we listen to you tell it. So intentional collaboration, really big deal. And that is an awesome example of how that's something that we can incorporate in our own work, or at least try to. Anyway, we can't all be writing the wedding cake story, you know? So don't write a wedding cake story, folks, right away. Use, you know, what's in your mind. Use what's in your story and think about how you could reach out to people.
That's so cool that you mentioned Dan Blank too, because he actually is where I learned about mid-level doers.
Oh, perfect.
And so you reach out to people who are making a living doing what you want to do, but are just a little bit farther ahead of you. Because those are the people who are going to have time to respond to your messages. Those are the people who remember like how it was to be in your shoes because they were there very recently, and they're going to be compassionate to, you know, your position and your request. And so the intentional collaboration, like I've built off of Dan's idea of mid-level doers, like, and put it into my own way. But that's funny that you connected it back to that. Small world.
It is a small world indeed. And folks, if you're looking for something to read on top of Amanda's most recent book, Champion Chocolatier, you can check out Be the Gateway by Dan Blank. That's a really big one. It's a pretty breezy read, and it talks about mid-level doers, human-centered marketing, finding your reader, all of that jazz. So hey, some really great parallels we're seeing here. Just thought I'd give a shout out to Dan for that one as well, because when we talk about it being a small world, Amanda, well, we talk about it in the context oftentimes of how we all need support and how we can all support each other. But as you and I have discussed previously, support is about so much more than just support from the writing community. And I even think your intentional collaboration example there is a testament, is further testament to that. Support is about so much more than only getting support from the writing community. So what does the S for support mean to you when we really view it through that lens?
So I really hit the jackpot when it comes to support. My husband and sons and my parents are like my number one cheerleaders. And I know that's not the case for everyone. And I'm so lucky there. I spoke to an entrepreneur class at UWL, University of Wisconsin La Crosse, for the non-Wisconsin people, as a part of a female business panel. And one student asked me my best advice for an entrepreneur who is just starting out. And the thing that I told her made her kind of sit back and say, what? And that was, I said, be picky about who you date. And she looked so confused. And I said, because you want to be with somebody who's going to cheer you up when things go bad or celebrate with you when things go well. But most importantly, you want to be with somebody who is not going to resent the time, energy, and effort that you put into your business. Because it's late nights, right? It's weekends, it's long hours, and you don't want to be with somebody who's going to make you feel bad about the time you put into it. I'm so, so lucky that my husband supports me in that way and never makes me feel bad for sitting in the basement on a sunny day recording a podcast while, you know, the kids go do something else. And even more than that, I would recommend finding a partner who also has a passion project. So my husband is a college baseball coach, and he spends a lot of hours in the spring at the field. He, you know, he has a full-time job, but then on top of that, he spends 6 days a week at baseball and almost every weekend between February and June at baseball. And I'm fine with that because in the other months, I am at writing conferences and I'm spending long hours working on edits and revisions. And, you know, we just tag off, okay, it's my season. Okay, it's your season. And there's none of the resentment of, you know, you're gone again. And I really think that if I didn't have a person in my life who could balance like that, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do. And so S for support is truly one of the most important aspects that makes my life work.
And I would say that that is 100% the case for me as well. I know that I would not be in a position to only have a part-time corporate job and then to be able to fill the rest of my time working on things like interviewing authors like you for these podcasts or working on my own writing, or now as my wife and I launched this candle business, you know, really focusing on that too. I wouldn't be in the position to do all of this if it were not for my wife having said to me at one point a couple of years ago, you are miserable working full-time and trying to do everything else that you believe is important to you. We don't have an opportunity to see each other. And you and I both know that we're in a position where, because we've been working full-time together and we don't go out all that often, we can afford to have you go down to part-time. And if that's going to make you happier, then that's what we need to do. And I never would have dreamed of making that decision on my own and perhaps putting that on her to make her feel like she had to step it up or earn more money or anything like that. I never would have done that had she not said, no, you need to do this. We'll find a way to make it work. And now that I have, yeah, way happier. Our relationship is far better. We have the opportunity to actually see each other and hang out every day. Even though we both work a lot, we still are in just such a better place. And were it not for that support, who knows where this podcast would even be? You know, I wouldn't be in a position to do as many interviews as I'm currently doing. So folks, I know we don't want to make it the only criteria for choosing who we're going to be with, but it is something that is really important. And knowing that you're with someone who supports you in the ways that you need that support really, really is important.
Definitely. 100% agree.
This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers build a thriving author platform through strategic web marketing. If you're not sure if you're on the right track with your website, one of their author website audits will help you find out. And right now, listeners to the Writescast Network can take 50% off one of these audits, which will look at your website's content, security, search engine optimization, and more. Not only that, it'll provide you with insight into what you might do to better connect with your audience. So to learn the strengths and weaknesses of your current website and save 50% along the way, visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/writescast today. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writescast. And that kind of makes me think now too about this idea of going from full-time work to part-time work, or if you're a writer who's able to go from part-time down to no time in the corporate space. Well, we're thinking about our writing as a business, whether we're working full-time, part-time, whatever the case is, we're going to have to at some point make some decisions about what it is we're going to invest in if we're going to be authorpreneurs. So that is where this letter N, needs versus wants, comes into play, I think. So Amanda, what can you tell us about the letter N in your ABCs of authorpreneurship?
N stands for needs versus wants. And when you start a new career or business, or even when you start a new hobby, it is so tempting to go out and buy all the things, right? We feel like we deserve the brand new computer for the business we're starting, or we definitely need all the best tech tools, or we have to have the fancy Pinterest-worthy office. You know, that's just kind of the culture that we live in. But if you give in to this urge, you are most likely going to blow your entire business budget before you even begin. And so this idea of needs versus want is to sit down and make a list of what you absolutely have to have in order to function for your business. You know, something that is a word processor, you know, maybe a hard drive to save some things, an email account, and some time. Truly, that's what you would need in order to begin writing a book. And so just, you know, figure out what you absolutely need and get only that. And then, you know, keep that list of wants and, you know, make a schedule or set up a plan. You know, when I finish this book, then I can buy this as a reward. Or once I've sold this many books, then I can add that subscription to my business list. Or, you know, it's just, you got to be conscientious about how you spend your money because it's so hard to make it come in. So you don't want to blow what you have on things that aren't absolutely necessary.
And I think, too, it's worth keeping in mind that no one, well, almost no one makes $1 million right away doing this, right? You know, it's one of those things where that's why that timeline for wants is so important and being able to revisit that over time. Because I think the statistic that I've heard thrown around at conferences, and I don't know how they would conceivably measure this, but we'll throw it out there just in case, is that it takes about 7 years of taking your writing rather seriously to even just start turning a profit. And I actually think that it was in 2012 that I decided, hey, I'm going to try to write books. Like, I really am going to try to write books. And wouldn't you know it, 2019 was the first year that I actually made any money. And we're not talking like thousands of dollars. I think I came out in the black by about $200, right? So it takes a while and you have to be judicious about what it is that you choose to invest in. And one of the reasons that 2019 didn't do even better, despite the fact that I had all those books out, is because, Amanda, I didn't have my priorities straight. I didn't know what my needs were or my wants were. And I was just going out there and grabbing everything that I felt like could help and then never really making the most of it. So it's okay to slow down. Make that list. Get comfortable with it before you find yourself in an awesome position or an even better position. Because like you say, Amanda, it's really easy to just go out there and think everything is a need and buy, buy, buy. And then where are you from a business standpoint, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I know that this one isn't like a fun or flashy letter of the alphabet when we go through all these tips and tricks, but I think that it's a really responsible step and it's going to help us be successful long term. One other tip I have when it comes to this is a lot of the things on my want list end up going on my like gift wish list. So for my birthday or Mother's Day or Christmas, like if there's something I really want, I'll put it for my business. I'll put it on my gift list. Like this year for Christmas, my husband and sons bought me a Canva Pro subscription. It wasn't a need. It was definitely a want, but I, you know, there wasn't much else that I really did want. And so I could have people purchase things for my business wish list as like my regular gift list. So if there's something you really want and like it's not in your business budget, like put it on your birthday list.
You know, and that specifically has me wanting to ask you, Amanda, how do you feel about Canva Pro? Because it's something I've considered investing in, but just haven't made the leap yet. Has that been pretty good for you?
Oh my gosh, I love Canva Pro. Oh, I probably use Canva every single day. Yeah. If you go to my website, amandazeba.com/Canva, like I did a whole blog post about why I love it so much. I'm actually an affiliate for it. So if you decide to sign up, you can use my link and that would help me big time, which ends up talking about, are we on letter P yet? Yes, that's an excellent segue.
Oh my God, you're right. Letter P is on the horizon here. So why don't we hop right into it? And I'm glad to know you have an affiliate link because I also use Canva almost every day. It's even what we use to make the labels for our Kill Your Darlings candle company stuff. And all of our websites are built using that. So it's probably time to invest in that. So I'll have to use your affiliate link when I get there. But let's talk about what something like affiliate links do for us. And that's this letter P. It's passive revenue. So Amanda, why don't you define for listeners what passive revenue is and why it's important that we pursue it?
Passive revenue is money that flows into your business with very little work. So it can be a lot of work to set up a passive revenue stream, but then once it's set up, it essentially makes money while you sleep. And so I'm going to explain this with an example again. So I am still an educator. Prior to being a part-time writer, I was a full-time middle school educator. And so I would sell items on this online marketplace called Teachers Pay Teachers. And instead of buying curriculum or school materials from something like Scholastic or Houghton Mifflin, where you're going to pay these like obscene prices, teachers can buy materials created by other teachers on this online marketplace for like $4 at a time or $10 at a time, instead of, you know, the $189 curriculum. And so I put the quizzes and the lesson plans and the bulletin boards and different things that I created for my classroom on this marketplace. And then they just sell them. And it's very popular with teachers. And whenever I make a sale, there's a notification on my phone that goes ka-ching. And now my kids and my husband know that whenever they hear the ka-ching, it means that I'm making money. So, you know, we'll be on a bike ride and we'll hear it, or we'll be playing Rummikub, which is our favorite game during quarantine. We'll hear the ka-ching, ka-ching, and they'll go, oh, mom's making money. And it's amazing because I'm not doing anything. I'm playing games. I'm exercising. I'm sleeping. And so that's what passive revenue is. It's setting up these streams of income to come into your business bank accounts with little to no work from you at that moment. So it's amazing because if you can set up streams like this, then it frees up your time to be able to work on your next book or your next course offering or whatever it is that you need to do in your day, your side, you know, your part-time work. So it's amazing. And everyone should try to figure out a way that they can add a couple of these into your business plan. And having more than one is great, and having a variety is great. So like if Teachers Pay Teachers crashed tomorrow, that would be disappointing for me, but it wouldn't be the end of my world because I have a couple of other ones like affiliate links for Canva or Amazon set up.
Kill Your Darlings Candle Company has partnered with the RightsCast Network to give away three of their candles for the wordsmiths of the world throughout the month of August 2020. That's right, you can now get either their Kill Your Darlings Dramatic Irony or Happily Ever After candles for free if you're the first person to email them at contact@kydcandleco.com and share this episode's secret word. And this episode's secret word is Chandler. Yes, Chandler, the archaic word for one who makes or sells candles. So email Kill Your Darlings Candle Company at contact@kydcandleco.com and use the word Chandler in the subject line to win this month's first free candle. Again, that word is Chandler. To learn more about Kill Your Darlings Candle Company and their quest to sustainably illuminate the lives of writers, readers, and their communities, visit kydcandleco.com. That's kydcandleco.com. Look at that, you know, it's just all about having those diversified revenue streams, and also if they're passive, like you say, you can be sleeping and someone can take advantage of an affiliate link. And I'll say too, folks might have heard me over the course of different episodes here on the RightsCast Network talking about how I really enjoy Scrivener as part of an ad, for example. And when I tell people to do something like visit bit.ly/writing software, folks, full disclosure, I mean, that's just an affiliate link. I'm in the Scrivener affiliate program. You can see that if you go over to my website. You see it if you're on rightscast.net. People can click that link, you get your 30-day free trial, and then ta-da, if you choose to buy it, that's a passive revenue stream for me. Same thing with something like Patreon. Folks, when you contribute to the RightsCast Network, that's awesome. I love that so much because every month, on the first of the month, I find out about 5 days later, oh yeah, that's right, I got some cash this month because people love these podcasts. So there are so many ways to do it, and Amanda has given you some examples. You get some examples from me here, but those passive revenue streams, I mean, they really are a boon when you are reminded that they are there. Because whether it's the ka-ching sound or the email that you get that lets you know, hey, someone just capitalized on that cool affiliate link that you had for mock-up shots or Scrivener or whatever the case is, that's all really good stuff. So I'm glad you mentioned it because it is so important that we have these passive revenue streams and, you know, diverse revenue streams as well.
Yeah, and speaking of diverse revenue streams, it doesn't necessarily have to do with your writing business. So I have an Amazon affiliate account, and this week my kids have been obsessed with this toy called Magic Tracks. It's like these tracks that you can like snap together. And then there's these battery powered cars that go all over, and they just got this Jurassic World set that like has these dinosaurs with it and whatever. They get up, like we tell them they can't get out of bed until 7 a.m. And then I go out to the garage, and at 7:23, they're like setting up the tracks. Wow. And so I put that on my Facebook page. I was like, if your kids are bored and needing something to entertain them, you know, that also works on their creativity and building skills, you guys got to get Magic Tracks. And I put my Amazon affiliate link with it. And, you know, I might sell a few of them, and there's $7. And yeah, it's only $7, but it's $7 I didn't have. And
$7 pays for a month of Canva Pro.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. You know, or like my sister bought me these sweatpants for my birthday, and they were like the best sweatpants I've ever had in my whole life. And so, you know, you put the affiliate link up. So don't necessarily feel stuck about having to find affiliates or passive revenue streams that connect 100% to your writing. It's okay to, you know, go beyond that into your real life. And it also helps people get to know the real you and build, you know, you as a person for them, not just as like an author.
Right. And that gets back into that idea of human-centered marketing and all of that jazz. We are just connecting so many dots here. And we now actually, this far into our mini alphabet that we're covering today, we've only got two letters left. And one of them is the letter U for update. So what role does updating play in our pursuit of authorpreneurship?
Ryan, nothing turns me off a social media channel or a blog or a website more than seeing it hasn't been active in weeks or months. You know, right. I'd be like, oh, I guess that person's not doing this anymore. And I like just kind of check them off my list. So it's super important to keep your social media channels and your website updated with current and new content so that people know you're actually still in business and doing things. It also is really good for like Google's algorithms. Like when you add new content to your site on a regular basis, that keeps Google informed that you are still in business, and it will put you, in higher, you know, higher up in the search results. So that's super important too. The other thing that when you think about updating is, you know, you were talking about how you've been at this kind of since 2012. And I think I've, you know, been at it like since 2011, started publishing books in 2013. And like, I think about how far I've come in that amount of time. And I feel like you probably have the same experience. Like, oh my gosh, I have gained so much experience, and I know so many more things, and I've done so many more, you know, events. And like, think, do you want people to view the most current version of you? Or do you want people to get to know the like 5 years ago you?
Right.
Like it's a pretty big difference, especially when, you know, you add a season's worth of events to your resume. So we want people to know the most current version of us. So when you think about your website bio, make sure that you update that every 6 months, or if you do something really cool, like get invited to the Sharjah Children's International Book Festival, like you put that on there so that people are looking at the most current version of you. I would also say the same thing for your resume. You know, pull it out every 3 to 6 months and make sure your newest book titles are on there and your newest experiences are on there, so that when an opportunity comes up that you need to send in a resume, like it's not this blind panic of, oh my gosh, and you send it out quickly and then you're like, oh shoot, but it didn't have this cool thing on it. So it's just kind of like, I don't know, maybe put it on your list quarterly, like update website bio and update resume, just so you can be ready to go when good things come your way.
And even just in general, having an author bio ready to go, like you say, because you never know when someone's going to ask for it. And if you're a listener to this program who says, well, I don't have an author bio because I don't have any books published, I don't have any short stories published, folks, you can still have a short author bio because it's really about the author. The actual author bio doesn't need to be a list of all the books that you've had published. It might mention, especially once you're publishing, you know, Amanda, when you have, for example, 10 books published, I know that the bio I pulled from your website or the version of it that I pulled down, it's not just a list of all 10 books. It's just about who you are as a person, and that you had that ready to go on your website, or when authors have that ready to go by email when I request it, I know that they're not frantically running around trying to write something up and not saving it in a file somewhere, and it looks a little different everywhere you go on the internet. Just getting that stuff organized. And like you say, Amanda, updating it getting it on your site, having it saved in a file somewhere so it's readily accessible, it's going to save you so much hurt and make people know that, hey, you're here, you're around, you're doing stuff, and not just once every 9 months, but fairly regularly, you know?
Yeah, it's just good professionalism. One pet peeve I have when people write their bios, if they haven't been published in the past, do not put the word aspiring in your title. Right. Yeah. Don't say aspiring author or aspiring writer. You're writing, so you are a writer. And if you're not an author yet, then just say writer. That's not lying. You are a writer. But when you kind of put that aspiring thing in there, I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like it's a little bit amateur, and it, like, I don't know. I just don't think it doesn't do you any good. Just say you're right. A writer. And that's not lying.
Be loud and proud about what it is that you do. Take ownership for the things that you care about, and just be yourself in this space, you know, because like you say, Amanda, there's this idea of who we are as authors that a lot of people see, but they miss out on the fact that these are people too. You know, we are all people here. It's not just about the list of books. It's about the things you care about. It's about the people in your life. It's about your hobbies that you have outside of writing. It all helps bring people into your circle. It's that human-centered, it's that person-to-person-centered marketing approach. And it's all important. And, you know, if you're not keeping that updated, if you're not keeping it up to date, it's harder for people to feel as though they can be let in and get a feel for who you are, what you write about, and what's important to you. So updating our letter U, very important there. And we have another letter now, Amanda. It's a letter near the end of the alphabet, just like the letter U. We're talking, of course, now about W. And we could have an entire hour about this topic, surely. But what is it that makes writing different? And why is it important that we embrace this letter W that's part of it?
Okay, so I believe that writing is not any different. So the W is, why is writing any different when we look at the ABCs of authorpreneurship? And I don't think that it is. So here's a quick story. I would go to the YMCA, you know, back when it was open, every day at about the same time at noon, because that was when the childcare window was open. And I'd see this group of people playing basketball every single day. And I was thinking, you know, like, when those people go home, I'm guessing that their friends and family members don't ask them questions like, oh, are you going to go pro yet? Have you gotten an agent? Like, you pay to play basketball every day. Like, don't you feel bad about that? Or like, did Adidas buy your clothes for you? Like, dude, give it up. Like, when are you, you're never going to make it. Like, I didn't think that anybody probably gave them crap about spending money to play basketball every True. Single day. And I feel like in the creative field, as soon as you say, I'm writing a book, or I'm going to a writing conference or something, you know, even like if you think about like artists too, or musicians or whatever, like as soon as you say something in the creative arts, people automatically come at you with these questions of like, well, are they paying you to speak at that conference? Or like, have you gotten a traditional publisher yet? Or who's your agent? Or they just, and I think they're probably just being curious, but it feels kind of crappy when people come at you with those questions. And I think that we need to teach ourselves and the others in our life to respect our time, energy, and efforts towards writing in the way that they respect their own hobbies. Like, people spend tons of money on golf or hunting or quilting or gardening, like thousands of dollars a year people spend on those hobbies, and nobody gives them grief about it. I mean, like, maybe their significant other does a little bit, but like, it's a thing that people do. Okay, cool. You're a hunter. Sweet. Or you're a golfer. And I guess I just challenge you to think, like, why is writing any different? Why should you justify or have to justify your time, energy, and finances when it comes to this, when other people don't have to justify their, you know, expenses for their hobbies? So I, like you said, we could go a whole hour on this and I could get really soapboxy about it, but this is a worthwhile use of your time and your money. And like Ryan said, be proud of it. You know, shout it out. This is what I do, and you can't make me feel bad about it.
And I am so glad that you clarified that and really turned the way that I posed the question on its head, because Amanda, even though I had some familiarity with your ABCs of authorpreneurship, it didn't hit me in the same way until I heard you say that and draw that direct comparison, because it has never, like I say, I've never considered the fact that, yeah, the people who play basketball every morning aren't getting harangued about why they're not in the NBA or playing in some European league or whatever the case is. It's like, yeah, they can just do that and they get to do it and they have fun working at it. And maybe there are little aspects of their game that they want to improve over time, but no one looks at them and says, hey man, you come here every Thursday morning and you try and work on that, you know, through the legs dribble before you take your jump shot. And it hasn't gotten any better in years. Isn't it time to just like hit the showers for good kind of thing?
Right.
Yeah, that's so silly. Like, I can't even get through that without kind of smiling to myself as I say it, because it's just so obscene. I mean, maybe you see that in like elementary school when kids are teasing each other, but that's a totally different context. You know, we're adults here and it's important that we look at it and say, hey, I like to write. Let me write. I don't need to write for you. You know, write for yourself if that's what's going to make you feel happy. So yeah, that really is what makes writing different. It's why writing is different. And so Letter W. Wow. Thank you, Letter W. I really appreciate that you took the time to be with us today. So very good, Amanda.
Sesame Street. Like, this episode was brought to you by the Letter W.
By the Letter W and a handful of others, but most importantly here, stick in the landing, Letter W. Great work there. So very good. Amanda, I want to make sure that listeners know where it is that they can learn more about the rest of the very important letters of our ABCs of authorpreneurship here. So why don't you let listeners know where online can they learn more about you and about these ABCs?
Absolutely. So the ABCs of authorpreneurship is the third section in a course I just launched. It's called the Take Action Author Plan. And, you know, a lot of times we spend a lot of energy planning or dreaming or wishing that we could make our author dreams come true. And this course just really walks you through the steps to stop that pausing and stop that dreaming and start taking action. So the first section of the course is Self-Publishing 101. The second section of the course is Book Marketing 101 that goes through all sorts of different ways to spread the word about your book. And then this third section is the ABCs of authorpreneurship that really talks about how to take your writing game, your writing career to the next level with these 26 different tips, tricks, strategies, mindsets, and lessons. All of that can be found on my website at amandazeba.com.
AmandaZeba.com. It's from A to Z with Amanda Zeba over there. So check out that website. It looks great. You know, a lot of Canva Pro stuff over there and great content as well from Amanda. So thank you so much for joining me for this episode. Amanda, I really do appreciate all that you were able to bring to this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
That's a wrap for my interview of author Amanda Zeba. Thanks to Amanda for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could leave the WritesCast Network a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the WritesCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a rating and review, thank you. I'd also like to thank the WritesCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/WritesCast. In exchange for their support, WritesCast Network patrons get access to some great patron perks, including WritesCast swag like stickers, t-shirts, mugs, discounts on my editing services, and entries and monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques performed by yours truly. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley today in supporting our programming directly at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Any level of contribution will get you access to some of those fantastic patron perks, so become a supporter now by making your pledge at patreon.com/WritesCast. That's patreon.com/WritesCast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit writescast.net/sponsors. Coming up next on the WritesCast Network is another Novel Approaches episode featuring guest co-host Maggie Derrick. For that episode, we'll be discussing writing dialogue or writing synopses, whichever topic you happen to have selected as part of our monthly listener poll. Our conversation about one of those topics will debut next week on August 14th. In the meantime, say hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at RightsCast, or by searching for the RightsCast Network. We're also available by email at rightscast@gmail.com, and you can now call us at area code 608-284-8342, or you can leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in our programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit rrcampbellrights.com or holler at me on Twitter as I am rrcampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. This episode of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast was edited by the folks at Electronauts. Yes, we are grateful to be in a position to send our audio files out to be mixed and rendered by the wonderful people at Electronauts, Inc. So if you are in the audio business or have some audio that you need edited, mixed, or rendered, visit them at electronautsinc.com. That's electronautsinc.com. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Right on. And write well. This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at RightsCast.net.